Okay, it's official. I'm welcoming you to Tuesday evenings at the Modern. I'm Terry Thornton, Curator of Education. So glad you're here tonight. Tuesday evenings is a weekly lecture series, and we have three more. We finish up on November 18th this season. And next week, Fionn Mead is here to share insights and experiences as the recently hired Walker Art Center's first senior curator of cross-disciplinary platforms. He's also acting department head of visual arts there at the Walker, as well as a longtime independent curator, a writer, and editor who has collaborated with a really interesting array of established and emerging artists. I'm excited about Fionn, and I encourage you to come back. Get online and look him up. I think you'll be interested in what he does. I'm happy to report that tonight, in conjunction with the Modern's current exhibition, Urban Theater, New York in the 1980s, we are fortunate to have with us the artist of Cosmic Closet, circa 1981, one of the exhibition's most popular works, which curator Michael Opping has described as a surreal three-dimensional landscape that could also be thought of as a theater in the round, thus making it perfect for urban theater. The artist I'm speaking of course, is Kenny Scharf. I'm not telling you anything. You all came to see him. And I know you're excited. Kenny was born in Hollywood and then moved to New York, where he earned his BFA from the School of Visual Arts in 1980. He now divides his time between LA and New York and sometimes Brazil. As a young artist in New York, he was quickly part of the East Village art scene with his friend and roommate Keith Haring. Kenny participated in many of the seminal alternative exhibitions of the time, including the Times Square show in 1980, and solo exhibitions such as his show at the Fun Gallery in 1981 launched his international career. In 1984, Kenny's work was included in the Venice Biennale as well as the 1995 Whitney Biennial. Of course, this was the beginning of what has become and still is a long and productive career. More recently, solo exhibitions have included Hodgepodge in 2012 at Honor Fraser Gallery, where Kenny is represented in LA, Kenny Scharf Colors with a K at Paul Kasman Gallery in New York in 2013, and this year, Kenny Scharf at Coulette in Paris. Kenny's work has been included in too many group exhibitions for me to account for all of them in this introduction, but I will mention the Media Sensation, the first major U.S. museum survey of graffiti and street art, Art in the Streets, curated by Jeffrey Deitch at MoCA in 2011. I think some of you may have had the fortune of actually seeing that exhibition, so I wanted to bring it up. And Kenny's work, of course, is included in major private and museum collections, all of which only touches on what has been a very impressive career. What is probably more important, however, is what is behind this work. Kenny Scharf is an enthusiastic and generous artist who agrees not only to do lectures like this evening, but also to work with young artists such as the Modern's talented group of students chosen for our teen artist program, which he did this Sunday. Many of whom I think are in the audience tonight, I'm happy to say. To further my point and to conclude this intro, I quote, "My personal ambition has always been to live the example. I believe the artist has a social responsibility to engage others in a thought process that ultimately brings art to everyday life, thereby enhancing the quality of our experience." With that, please join me in welcoming Kenny Scharf.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Thanks for having me. I'm a little bit nervous, but once I get going, I'll be fine. So I have a lot of stuff to talk about, but I'm trying to limit it because I've been doing this for too long and we'd be here forever. So I'm going to just start a little bit from my earlier days. This is a piece I did. I was in high school, I grew up in LA, and I obviously was influenced by my surroundings. I should remember the name of this piece, but I don't. I don't know if there's anything I need to say. It's pretty apparent what's going on here. So, burning, earthquakes, fires, part of the world that I grew up in. More of the early days in LA. These structures are car washes, some of my favorite buildings in LA. That Ships is a coffee shop, and then probably you recognize the 76 gasoline station. So growing up in LA in the 60s, I'm from the 50s, I was very much influenced by my surroundings, and the architecture and everything around me screamed, "You're going to outer space." And I really believed it. So when all the cars look like they're going to take off and the architecture looks like it's in outer space, it was a time that was filled with fantasy, and I really clicked on that fantasy. This painting is, I think, the first paintings are all from the 70s. So we're going to go a little bit in this early work. That is a self-portrait. So I've been a Finn fanatic ever since I was a little kid. I remember being in the back seat of my parents' car. We didn't have seat belts back then. They didn't exist. So I remember all the cars having, you know, just really made an effect on me. You know, when you look at these 50s and early 60s cars, they're filled with this fantasy and this kind of optimism about the future and the space age that was just beginning. So this painting I did right before I moved to New York. And basically, it's telling the story of who I thought I was or am. A space age guy. My name actually, at the time, I named myself when I moved to New York, Jet. Which is now the name of my grandson. So here's a painting I did my first year in college. I was going to UC Santa Barbara. I did this in my dorm room. And I thought this painting was a good one to show because it kind of represents a lot of what my philosophy and my inspiration about where we are as a culture. Here is this woman. This is called Barbara Simpson's New Kitchen. She is very happy. She's showing off her new pink kitchen, and she's oblivious that there's a dragon coming out of the sink, which in a way is kind of like how I view a lot of how people live then and also today, where we are going through our lives, we are consuming, we are being happy, but at the same time there's like monsters in our midst. And I'm very aware, I'm actually an optimist, but at the same time, I'm always thinking about the danger and the scary side. So I kind of like the excitement of the opposites. This is her husband. I did this in the dorm room too. This is George Simpson barbecuing. And the reason he's barbecuing in the bathroom is because outside is completely full of nuclear radiation and you can't go outside anymore. But he doesn't seem to mind, does he? He's just barbecuing. Got plants growing out of his sink in his bathtub. Oh, and by the way, anyone who wants to ask any questions while I'm talking, please feel free. This is the start of a series of paintings that I did when I first moved to New York. About 2 months after I arrived, I was very lucky. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of a store in New York called Fiorucci. It was a store on 59th Street, and it was more than a store. It was kind of like a scene. It was a daytime disco. I've never really seen anything like it, where in the daytime, everyone's there, and it's a real happening, a real scene. So I was offered this show right off. I walked into Fiorucci with a friend of mine, and I don't know, maybe it was something about the way I look, but immediately started talking to the people there. One, does anyone know who Joey Arias is? He's a performer. He was working there. He kind of grabbed me and learned about my art, and next thing I knew, I was having a show there. It was called Fiorucci Celebrates the New Wave, 1979. So this series is called it's the story of Estelle. This woman is named Estelle. I'm not going to show all of this series, but just a little taste of it. She's having a pizza party. Why is there these TVs on top of her pizza? Because the aliens are coming out of the TVs on the pizza. And what are the aliens doing? They gave her a one-way ticket to outer space. So there she is, she's ready, she's got her bag packed, and she's about to get in her Dodge, and there's a Cadillac flying. She's a jet-set woman of the future. She gets in her car, and she's inside. She's looking out the window. It says, the title of this one is Escaped in Time, I'm Pleased. She escaped the annihilation of the Earth by the nuclear bombs. Yes?
I just wanted to ask, what materials did you use to create these pieces?
These pieces are acrylic with an airbrush. Back then, I was very influenced by the time that I was painting and living in, which was airbrush art was kind of the thing, which later came in handy when I started using the spray can. This is kind of a very similar technique. So she's quite pleased. She's the only survivor. She doesn't seem to mind it because she escaped. And she's watching the bomb go off on TV in space. And there she is, flying around all by herself, very happy. Okay, this is going to the next chapter. That's the end of the Estelle series. Basically, I'm not going to read this all to you, but this is something that I, kind of a philosophy of mine, that I wrote in 1981, which is the top part, and then there's a little addendum in 1983. And what I did was, it's explanation for this new religion called Jetsonism. And Jetsonism is basically what's going to happen. Okay, one of the things that I was obsessed with, and I guess I still am, is the end of the world. At the time, growing up from the 50s, well, born in the 50s, but growing up, you know, we had the drills, the alarm, you know, everyone get under your desks, get ready for the nuclear bomb. Like getting under your desk is really going to help if the bomb's going off. But that's what we were told to do. So there was always this underlying fear that the bomb was going to go off any moment. And it kind of is a theme that I'm obsessed with. There's a lot of things I'm obsessed with, but the bomb is definitely one of the things that captivates me. So basically, what do you do when the bomb goes off? Well, you put your hands up like that, and if you're good, you go straight to the good place. And if you're bad, well, you probably know what happens if you're bad. And it's weird because I just made this up on my own, but it's a little bit like, what's that called? It's part of the, when, like a, the new Christianity, when people, the rapture. It's a little bit like the rapture, which I thought was really strange, but it is. And I talk about mandalas and symbology. There was a book that I was very fascinated with, that I still am, called Man and His Symbols by Carl Jung. And it really influenced me a lot and taught me about mandalas and the meaning of mandalas. And actually, I should have shown some other mandalas, but I didn't. And then in the second part, oh, by the way, the term of, I don't know if you've ever heard of the term, I'm sure you have, pop surrealism. Well, I'm going to claim I made up the term. Here we are, 1981. I name it pop surrealism. I'm not sure I like the direction that it's gone completely, because I feel like people have, it's kind of become synonymous with lowbrow. Not that I think lowbrow's bad, but it's kind of been taken over by a lowbrow kind of mentality. But pop surrealism, what it really means is, in when I made it up, is that what I think is that I am coming from a surrealist place where you're bringing things up from your subconscious as a surrealist. But growing up, when I did, being bombarded with imagery and media and all this stuff, that these images, a lot of cartoons and media images, became part of my subconscious. So when I started working or painting and creating as a surrealist, the imagery was infused with pop, which is inside of me. It's not like the pop artist from the 60s were basically, let's say you take the Andy Warhol soup can, he took it off the shelves and said, look, everyday objects can be art. And it's basically looking at it from an outsider point of view and like an outside stance. Well, what I did was different. It's coming from inside me. So really, what is a surrealism? Because it's full of pop imagery, pop surrealism. So the second part is about this character called L. Fredericks. And L. Fredericks is a conglomeration of Fred Flintstone, who is the ancestor, and Elroy Jetson, which comes from the future. So what happened was, and I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm just going to tell you all this stuff. The future and the past collided. When the future and the past collided, it created a time splat, which is all time, no time, every time, which is chaos. And when chaos occurs, that is when creativity and creation happens. So I created, in the very early part of my career, I was doing images directly taken from the Jetsons, as you see in the show. I have Fred and I have the Flintstones and the Jetsons. And then when the time splat occurred, everything mutated and became these characters, which are kind of, well, not kind of, which are my own characters, which are mutations from the future and the past. And the reason why Ix is in there is because of Felix the cat. I just like Felix. I threw him in there. Okay, so we're going to jump into customization. Customization is something I started back in the late 70s, early 80s. What it really started was my fascination with trash and garbage, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. And I was mostly interested in picking up things that I would see in the street,